there, and welcome to the 5th Annual Transforming Toddlerhood Conference. I'm so happy you're here with us. I'm your host, Devin Koontzman, toddler expert and founder of Transforming Toddlerhood. I'm on a mission to dispel the myth that toddlerhood is terrible and empower parents and caregivers to overcome the challenges of toddlerhood, nurture their little ones' development, and create confidence in their parenting skills. And that's exactly what we're here to do today. And I am just so excited to introduce you to Leslie Priscilla, parent coach and Latinx parenting founder. Welcome so much, Leslie.
Hey, Devin. Thank you so much for having me.
Oh, I'm just so happy you're here. And before we dive into all the great things we're talking about today, I'd love for you just to tell our audience a little bit more about yourself and what you do.
Yeah. So I identify as a first generation Chicana. That means my parents are both immigrants from Mexico. And I'm a mother to three little ones. Two of them actually are toddlers. I have a 10-year, almost 10-year old. I have a just turned 4-year old, and then I have a 2.5-year old who will be 3 in May. So very, very loud in my household. But you know, that's really one of my full-time jobs. The other full-time job is running Latinx Parenting, which really was created out of, you know, just wanting to have more representation of my culture, right, in parenting, and integrating the values of Latinx culture along with all of these things that we've learned since about, you know, brain development and emotional intelligence, all of those things. So, and I run groups and, you know, conversations having to do with all of those things, including parenting and reparenting.
I love it. I love the work that you're doing, and I'm so excited to talk to you. And so you have two toddlers at home, so you have lots of experience there. And what I'd love to start this conversation off by asking you is, what do you feel makes toddlerhood a challenging and often misunderstood developmental period?
Yeah, it's interesting because a friend of mine who moved away recently, she said that the toddler years tend to often be an assault on the senses. And I was like, that's such a beautiful way of putting, like, because, you know, some people are like, oh, I felt so bad. You know, I feel so bad because I react this way. And it's like, well, toddlers are really loud, you know, and for those of us that are really sensitive, or maybe even have, you know, trauma in our childhoods and in our backgrounds, that can feel really overwhelming. And so it makes sense, right? It makes sense that we would feel that overwhelm. But they also present us with so many opportunities to really do that deeper inner work of discerning, you know, where some of those reactions come from. And so, but I think, you know, it's such a special age. I laugh all the time. I laugh more than I cry. You know, I don't know if I laugh more than I sleep, but I try to sleep. But, you know, it's just such a special time where I just feel like there's so much curiosity that inspires me to be curious. There's so much play that inspires me to be playful. You know, there's so much externalizing of emotions that allows me to feel like I can, you know, externalize emotions in a positive way and be able to model that for them. So I feel like that I'm definitely a reflection of what they are teaching me and vice versa, I would hope.
Yeah, I really love this. And this idea of like toddlerhood is an assault on the senses. I'm like, oh yeah, totally, totally can see that. And just this idea that you're talking about, that if we can embrace some of the challenges or what we might be uncomfortable with, there's opportunity to learn and grow inside of that.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that if we are not students, right, of our toddlers, like, I feel like that's kind of where I am perpetually. It's like, I'm learning, right? And each of my toddlers have been so different from one another. So it's like, I can't apply the same lessons that I learned from my first child's toddlerhood to my second child's toddlerhood to my third child's toddlerhood, right? Like, they are so, so different. And so as I'm engaging with them, I'm realizing how little I know, you know, how little I know just about this tiny human that's evolving and has its own, you know, signature that's developing with or without me, right? And so I feel like there's so much learning to be done for parents, for us, in just allowing them to be, you know, in just allowing them to show us who they are. And I find it so beautiful and also, you know, very challenging.
Yeah, exactly. We're allowed to have two opposite feelings about it at the same time.
Yes, I'm all about holding that duality, definitely.
Exactly. Well, today we're talking about reparenting ourselves as we parent toddlers. And I would love for you to start us off with just kind of explaining, like, what is reparenting and why does it matter?
Yeah, thank you so much for asking that. I feel like reparenting is the most important part of parenting, honestly, because it's recognizing that we are still very much holding a part of ourselves that represents our childhood, right? So I call it the inner niña or the inner child. There's a lot of work around this. There's a lot of different, you know, frameworks that incorporate this kind of stuff, like internal family systems, you know, is very akin to this inner child work as well. But for me, it's really been remembering, you know, the power of remembering who I was at these different ages, right? And so my toddlers are reminding me of what little Leslie at 2.5 or what 4-year-old Leslie might have enjoyed, might have needed at the time. And really, I get to sit with whether or not those needs were met, right? And how many of those unmet needs are being projected now onto my children. And so it's an invitation, you know, reparenting is really an invitation to get to know ourselves at a deeper level and to have really honest conversations about what needs were met and what needs were not met. And so I bridge that together with the relationship that we create with the inner parents, or what I call my inner madre. And so it's this ongoing relationship. So it's like, yes, we have our external children. You know, I have 3 children, but I also have my inner child that I also want to nurture, that I also want to support, that I also want to show up for in a way that maybe my parents were not able to, you know, for whatever reason, the circumstances that were around them in their parenting journeys did not allow them to be able to show up in the ways that I needed. And so that's the gist of reparenting. There's so much to it, but it definitely is just building that relationship with that version of yourself that you still carry. And that's still trying to show you where you need to heal.
Yeah, that's beautiful. And this idea of the inner child, I'd love for you to go a little bit deeper on that in terms of how does our inner child show up in parenting and caregiving situations?
Yeah, I mean, it shows up in parenting and also just in every aspect of our life. I mean, it shows up in our relationship with our bosses, it shows up in our relationship with our partners, with our own parents. And so one of the ways that we can tend to project some of our inner child wounds onto our children is, you know, externalizing certain needs, right? So my child says something to me that feels disrespectful. Maybe they used a tone, or maybe they, you know, maybe my toddler whacked me, right? Like that's definitely something that happens. And so if I was hit as a child, my instinct might be to react, right? Overreact and get, the term is triggered. I usually use activated. I get really activated by getting hit, right? Because it feels like I'm under attack. Is it true that I'm under attack? You know, is it true that that situation, that pattern is repeating itself in that moment? No, it's your toddler, you know, exhibiting very normal toddler behaviors. And it's up to us, again, to be able to do the work to be able to discern, you know, this situation is different than the situation that I experienced, but I'm noticing that my inner child is coming up to show me that I still have this activation that I can work on, you know, that I can process, that I can write about, that I can dance about, like whatever the process looks like. And so they're definitely showing us the areas that still need a little bit more work. Right. And so that's just one of them. That's something that a lot of parents that are in groups with me have said, you know, it really, really triggers when my child whacks me, or they try to throw something at me, or they're kicking me, you know, and that's very normal also. Like we're humans. And so we're going to feel that attack. And also if we were hit as children, if we were talked to in certain ways as children, that inner niña, that inner child is going to come to the surface and say, hey, I don't feel taken care of right now. And so it's up to us, you know, as the inner parent to know what taking care of that inner child looks like.
Yeah. Yeah. This is a great example. And I feel like another place that this really shows up, is with crying, yeah, whining, tantrums, basically anywhere where there's like a large expression, of emotions that maybe we just didn't have the space to express that as kiddos.
Yeah, 100%. I see this a lot online. Like there's a lot of people who feel very strongly that children should be, you know, kept quiet, that they should not express their emotions. And all I see is just very wounded inner children, you know, from the people that are advocating for these harsher parenting strategies. It's like, well, it makes sense, right? It makes sense that they would feel so deeply uncomfortable with a child crying or expressing those big emotions because they were not able to express theirs. And they may not feel like they have permission to even at this point.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. And, you know, you also bring up another great point that about relationships, that This can show up in lots of different relationships, and also underscoring the fact that parenting is a relationship. And I always like to point this out because relationships are a two-way street, and it's, you know, parenting isn't something you do to someone else. It is a relationship. There's a two-way street there. And I just think that there's something really profound as relating to it as a relationship.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's that relationship back to yourself too, right? Like, it's not separate necessarily from the relationship to your children. It's actually deeply entwined. You know, if I am feeling really connected with myself and really grounded and really, you know, rested, all of these things, right, then I'm going to be able to show up in a way that's more aligned with what my intentions are when I'm in relationship with my children. And so it really does start here. I think for me as a Latina woman, you know, as a brown woman, I feel like there's a lot of external things that are happening as well. There's a lot of systemic, you know, things that historically have been present. And so when I'm working with parents, especially Spanish speaking, you know, immigrant parents who have toddlers, I also want to bring up the fact that, you know, there's no shame necessarily in moving through this really slowly, right? Because we do have to acknowledge the ways that we've been prevented from being in alignment with what our intentions might have been, that maybe other demographics may not, you know, experience the same way. And so I do want to point that out, that it is because the work that I'm doing with Latinx parents is so specific to our cultural challenges, that shows up in parenting toddlers and in relationships and in relationships with ourselves as well.
Yeah. I mean, this is so important. You know, thinking about culture and how it impacts parenting, how it impacts our relationship with ourselves, and how it impacts the inner child. And even beyond that, thinking about past and generational trauma and how that impacts the inner child. I'd love to hear a little bit more about that as well.
Yeah, I think that I've, you know, done a lot of reflection on how the inner child work is actually social justice work, you know, and so being able to create the bridge from, as I'm healing myself, as I'm healing my childhood wounds, as I'm healing my historical wounds, right, by the inner work that I'm doing to validate myself, to really hold myself in a light of, you know, what is my capacity, what is my potential, outside of all of the messages that I receive from my culture, right, outside of all of the do's and don't do's from my culture, who really truly am I? And doing that exploration within the inner child work actually creates the space for us to be advocates for ourselves, you know, advocates for our people in standing up to ongoing systemic oppression, right? So no, we actually don't deserve to be kept quiet. You know, actually we don't deserve to continually face injustices. Actually we deserve liberation. And so that liberation is experienced first in that healing of that inner child. And then moves into that advocacy piece. So I love, you know, creating that bridge when we're talking about inner child work, because some people think it's very much about just like, you know, you as an individual are doing this work with yourself. And while that's partially true, we can't ignore the fact that this ripples outward. And actually we have, you know, a discipline now, like we can discipline ourselves to say, these are the things that I need. Yes. But these are the things that my people need, you know, these are the things that my family needs. And how can we advocate for us as a collective, moving away from individualism more into collectivism, and think about how our journeys are impacting everybody else's and vice versa.
Yeah. And, you know, I think this is also part of like, just looking at like our own childhood experiences and the childhood experiences of our parents and their grandparents, and just that trickle down effect that, you know, now there's a science out there that really shows and talks about how generational trauma and experiences, you know, flow down through genetics and through the generations. And I think it's something so important to remember, because when we think about ourselves and our own wounds, it can just feel so, and sometimes like isolating, or like there's just a specific place to like point a finger to or something like that, when it's like, wow, it's like we are actually impacted by, you know, generations of what our families have experienced, not even just what we experienced in our childhood.
Yeah, I think that's so fascinating. And I'm so interested in that work. I know you probably know of Rezma Menakem, who wrote My Grandmother's Hands. And, you know, he calls, names something called like white body supremacy. And the point of that is to name how a lot of these generational things actually are still alive in our bodies. And we may not be able to, like you said, we may not be able to have, you know, an awareness of exactly where it came from. Like, maybe this actually is not from my childhood. I really noticed this in the last year. I'm married to a man who is white. And, you know, around the racial reckoning after the murder of George Floyd, I started to feel a lot of contraction in my body, you know, just being around him. I didn't feel safe. And I was like, this is really weird. Like, I don't know why. And it wasn't until I kind of worked with one of my spiritual counselors that I recognized that this was ancestral. You know, this is kind of ancestral trauma that is coming to the surface. And so having to, you know, recognize that, not necessarily having to do anything about it in that moment, but noticing like this is showing up in my body in ways that I might not be cognitively able to identify in my head, in my brain, but I can identify in my body and I can work to, you know, ease that tension, ease that contraction that's happening in my body, with, you know, with the support of the elements, with the support of breathing exercises, et cetera. And so that is part, deeply a part of the reparenting work, because as you're nurturing your inner child, as you're validating what she's experiencing, you are recognizing how she's showing up in your body, right? So like, this is what's happening. This is where it's happening. And I don't have to have a cognitive explanation for it, actually, you know, because, and Dan Siegel talks about implicit memory versus explicit, which makes so much sense within the context of this, right? Because we don't have to remember, we just have to acknowledge what's happening and be able to work through it from that place.
Yeah. And I think this really, like, this idea really opens the door to this broader idea of compassion and being able to access that, because sometimes, oh my gosh, like, we can just get so frustrated. I mean, I missed the client call the other day because I switched, like, an old email account. The calendar invite was under an old email account. I got rid of that email account and then I missed this client call. So I've been working with for like 2.5 years and she was totally understanding. But like in that moment, I was like, oh my gosh, like, this is just so, like, why'd I do this? And like beating myself up and like just getting mad at myself. And it's just so easy to, like, you know, take a moment, get activated by it, and just kind of go into this spiral, whether it's just in life or in parenting. And so just remembering that, wait, like, this is my experience at this moment, but it doesn't mean that this is who I am. And just remembering that there's like a wider ripple effect of what impacts us as human beings and impacts our stress response and our feelings and emotions. I think it just can allow us to like really start offloading some of that blame and guilt, and really just starting to access that deeper area of compassion.
Yeah, definitely. And there's pieces of it that, that, you know, speak to kind of like the healthy accountability, right? Like, I can, now that I've done this work with myself, within myself, with my inner niña for as long as I have, I feel like I have a really good sense of discernment when it comes to like, this is what I'm responsible for in this situation, right? If there's a conflict situation, if there's a misunderstanding, like, this is what I'm responsible for. I acknowledge that this is what I could have done different, didn't do different, might do different next time. But I'm not going to take the onus of every single, you know, responsibility, right? Like, the relationship is complex, and it's beautifully complex, right? Because we're learning so much about ourselves and each other in relationship with our children, with one another. But there are certain things that we are not responsible for, right? And so it's a balance, right? Because one extreme is to say, like, this is all your fault. And then the other extreme is to say, this is all my fault, right? And so we have to kind of figure out like where we are on that continuum and try to bring it into balance. And a lot of that is informed, where we are on that continuum is informed by how we grew up, right? Am I used to actually taking all of the responsibility and shaming myself and saying, I'm such a bad girl, you know, I'm such a bad little girl, because I forgot that appointment, I'm such a bad, you know, it's all of these internal messages that don't necessarily come up, like, you're not saying that to yourself, but your body feels that way.
Yeah. And gosh, this just like brings up a conversation that I had the other day with someone. And it just reminds me of this propensity that we have to like, somehow we find it just lands like there's some type of comfort in being able to like find someone or something to blame. And like this idea of, you know, okay, this child's having this behavior. And someone's like, well, you know, like the child's being bad. And then they're like, oh, well, you know, if we're not going to say the child's being bad anymore, then I guess it must be bad parents. And I'm like, whoa, yeah. Why does anyone have to be bad in this situation? No. Like, why does anyone have to be bad or wrong here? And it's just so, I don't know, what you were saying before really reminded me of that, of just this like propensity to like, want to have a place to offload that blame or shame or guilt, and just knowing that's not necessarily true or helpful, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that part of that is just because we live in a paradigm of binary. You know, we just live in a paradigm that's like good versus bad, wrong versus right, you know? And so I talk a lot about decolonization and what that means on a personal level and in our parenting. And so part of it is moving away from those labels, right? And really talking about the action and not taking away the person's humanity from that, right? So in this beautiful book called Decolonizing Mental Health, Renee Linklater writes, you know, that traditionally Indigenous peoples, the Indigenous peoples that she studied anyway, they don't have terms like victim or offender. They speak more to people who cause harm and people who have been, you know, harmed. And so when we think about it in that way, it's so in alignment with nonviolence, right? Because I also, the kind of structure that I use is like decolonized nonviolent parenting. And that nonviolence piece asks us to shed the judgments, shed the labels, shed the all of that surface stuff, right? This is a good child. This is a bad child. As opposed to sustaining that, you know, that child's humanity and saying like, my child is neither. We're all neither and we're both, right? Like we all have so many, we are such complex creatures. It's wonderful. And we can't take away people's humanity because of the harm that they cause, because the harm that they cause is from a place of woundedness.
Yeah. And, you know, this is the thing, I talk a lot about this at Transforming Toddlerhood in terms of really shedding labels from children and their behavior and even their character. I mean, just in general, I talk about this topic a lot, and most notably in terms of behavior and this idea of good, bad, or right, wrong behavior. And, you know, so as parents start making this switch, and I think that, okay, you're like, I can see, okay, my child's not trying to be bad. They're having a hard time. Like they're able to start to see this, but then sometimes that's where the work ends. And we have to remember as parents and caregivers to bring that work to ourselves. And I this is really part of that reparenting process that, well, if it's not like, okay, so if my child's good, then I must be doing a bad job or be bad. It's like, oh no, wait, like none of us have to have those labels placed on us. Like everyone's doing the best they can in the moment. And Sometimes we're struggling and sometimes we're not. Same for adults, same for children. And it lands like, this level of compassion is really part of that, that reparenting conversation.
Yeah, definitely. I think about, you know, I think it was Ross Green and like Stuart Shanker, they talk about like, it's a matter of skill, not will, you know, it's for children. But I feel like when we apply that to ourselves as parents, it actually eases so much of the burden with having to parent perfectly, right? It's like, I've never been in this situation, Devin, where I've been parenting three children in this day and age. You know, I didn't do this last lifetime, you know, this is the first time I'm doing this. And so I have to be able to give myself that grace. Otherwise, I'm not going to be able to give that grace to my children when they are messing up, you know? And so I'm like, I'm building the skill too. You know, I don't know anything about parenting in a pandemic with three children and, you know, two toddlers. We're figuring this out, right? And so I feel like one of the things that really mitigates the stress that happens when we're feeling that weight of having to parent in these really perfect, you know, very, I don't know, just very clean, I guess, ways. Like, I feel like that's community, you know, community really mitigates that, because I don't actually take one-on-one clients. Every now and then I'll take one, but the magic happens when we are able to connect with each other's experiences, right? And so when I can be like, I'm really struggling, I don't know what the hell I'm doing. You know, I feel like hitting my kids every now and then, and I can't stop yelling. When you say that and somebody else is in the room feeling that exact same thing, there's so much power in that sense of community, right, is what lowers that stress enough for us to be in that connection with our children, right? And so I just feel like there's so much of this, even, you know, within the reparenting work, we have to examine the ways that we've been told that we are burdens and not actually encouraged to ask for that support and to ask for that resonance. And so that's all a part of, you know, kind of undoing that messaging. Because I think it's powerful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And community is so important. I see this happen all the time in my membership, in our community calls that we have, and, you know, parents walking away, not only having their loads lightened because, you know, they got some answers to some questions, but just knowing that they're not alone in the struggles that they're facing can just be so normalizing. And again, when we can normalize experiences, that it also opens the door for compassion. And for me, like, compassion is a big part of reparenting, you know, it's like, yes, a really big part of that. And I'd love to hear a little bit more from you, like, in a practical sense, what does reparenting look like?
Yeah. There's different things, there's different moments that call for different kind of tools that I use, but for the most part, it requires me to take some space away from the situation, right? And so the initial is like, I need to remove myself for a little while if I have the support in that moment, right? If I don't have the support in that moment, then it's more likely that I'm going to do something that will require some kind of repair later. But if I'm in a moment where I'm able to take the space, I really do talk to myself as if there is a child within me. And I remind her, and I'll usually tap my chest, you know, and just kind of like remember I'm like right here, right? I don't know why, but like, this is so soothing and comforting to me. And I'll let her know, like, I'm here. I'll speak to her in Spanish and say, you know, aquí estoy, right? I'm here. You're safe, right? Because so much of that activation comes from that feeling of dysregulation and unsafety. Like, I'm not safe in this moment. And so now I'm in survival and I'm wanting to yell and I'm wanting to do all these things. And so that reminder that I'm safe. And so if I have a picture of myself around, I do have an altar where I keep pictures of my grandmother. I keep pictures of myself as a child so that I can feel it. And I have different elements on that altar as well. So one of the first practices that we engage in the reparenting course is to create an inner child altar, right? And really honor who that child is in their presence in our lives. And so I'll reconnect with something, right? Reconnect with something that will remind me that I am safe, that my inner niña is safe in that moment, that we need to take deep breaths. And so it's not just about validation, it's also about creating concrete steps and concrete things that we can do in order to increase that inner child's feeling of safety before we come back and engage with our external children. And so sometimes that looks like I need to, you know, what would feel loving is the question that I've been taught to ask. My maestra, my teacher, Sylvia Poedo, she, when we're doing this work together, she will, that's the question that she'll ask is, you know, what would feel really loving to you? And sometimes when we're in that moment, we don't have an immediate answer, you know, and so part of it also is engaging with our guidance, engaging with a part of ourselves that's outside of ourselves, this like universal wisdom, right? I call it my future abuelita self. Other people call it God. Like, there's a version of myself that is already this higher version, right? And so if I don't have that immediate answer about what is loving for my inner child in that moment, I call upon, you know, this guidance, my future abuelita self, this ancestral wisdom to guide me. And so sometimes that looks like pulling from an oracle deck, you know, sometimes that looks like just kind of praying on it because I don't consider myself a religious person, but I very much am a spiritual person and I do pray. And so that is, I think, what offers me that strength, right? If I'm specifically praying for strength to get through this or for guidance in knowing what would feel loving to me, that's what I ask for. That's again, super hard when you're not supported, right? When your toddlers are like banging on your door, which happens, and you're just like, I'm just trying to get regulated. And so, you know, I say this just with a little, you know, caveat is like, you have to just do your best, right? Do your best to remember that inner niña, to remember that inner child, and to know that a lot of that activation comes from that feeling of them feeling unsafe.
Yeah. And safety is so important. And one thing that I always talk about in terms of like before even responding to a child's challenging behavior is, well, first thing is creating that physical safety, because if our child's not safe and we're not physically safe, then it just continues to perpetuate that inner stress response where we're perceiving a threat. And until we are like, have our child in a position and us in a position where we're no longer under a threat of safety, and sometimes there never is, you know, threat of safety, right, but sometimes there definitely is, that it's like, that's what I always call like this pre-step or this pre-work to then creating that emotional safety, which is, you know, really what you're speaking to right now. And what I've found, like what works for me, especially if like, you know, I need a way to like reconnect with myself or to, you know, re-regulate, but I like can't really go somewhere. Sometimes for me, it's about sitting down, because if I sit down, it kind of takes the wind out of my sails. Mm-hmm. And even beyond that, laying down, like it's really hard for me to be activated and frustrated and angry if I'm like laying down. Like it's really hard. You kind of need that, like that upward energy, I feel like. And then, or sometimes I go to a window and even throw it open to get some fresh air. And these are some tools and strategies I personally use. And for everyone, it's different, right? We're all different people. But those are some tools I like to use for creating my own emotional safety when I like maybe just, you know, can't leave the room where I'm at.
Yeah. And as you're speaking, I'm just like, you're engaging with the elements there too, right? Like you're grounding by laying down or by sitting down somewhere, like you're grounding by opening that window. You are incorporating air, you know, into the process to regulation or to regulate. So, you know, I really encourage parents to just kind of like sit with what element do you feel, water, just drinking water sometimes, right? Just like, I need a glass of water because I feel like there's a lot of rigidity in me and the water is going to allow for some fluidity, not just, you know, in my body, but externalized in other ways. And so I encourage parents to really connect with whatever element is going to serve you in the moment, right? Lighting Palo Santo, like I light Palo Santo when I want that like smoky, you know, fire energy. So there's different ways that we can connect with ourselves by connecting with, you know, with the earth, really Mother Tierra, right? Mother Earth shows us so many ways of coming back into balance.
Yeah. And coming back to ourselves. And I also loved how you said, like, we have to make it concrete, like not only concrete steps, but also something concrete to connect to, which makes so much sense, because when we're stuck in a stress response, you know, all the thoughts, feelings, emotions, they're like floating around in like a flurry. And, you know, to really, for me to come out of that stress response, it's about getting grounded, and getting grounded, I think, is synonymous with like something concrete. So even, you know, when we're doing the inner child work, looking at a picture of ourselves from when we were young, you know, trying to tap in, talk to that small, you know, as if the small child is still there. But I'm also thinking, like, even for a child, like if your toddler is like driving you nuts and you're like, oh my gosh, I can't handle another minute of it. And sometimes I like suggest that you like go look at a picture of when your child was a little baby, or, you know, have that as like a background photo on your phone, or get a custom phone case. I always go back to the phone, because our phones are just basically like an appendage at this point, you know? So I just think it's a really, it's like, this is another way to like concretely like come back, to just this part of like, you know, seeing our own inner child and that inner child of our little kiddos too.
Yeah. I mean, there are so many ways that you can even like merge those two pictures together and make that your home screen or your wallpaper, right? And so a lot of people don't know this, but I make like inner child collages. And so like people sometimes will send me, I just do it for fun now, but people will send me a picture of themselves as children, and I'll kind of like design a digital collage around them to like show them, you know, how their inner child should have been seen in that light. And so I love the idea of having that be something that you put with, right, with the picture of your child as a baby. I have gotten really good at just in the moment trying to remember what my child looked like as a newborn, right? Like as I'm looking at this child's face, I'm like, okay, this is still that little baby that I remember sleeping next to in my bed that first night that we were home, you know, like this is still, that essence has not changed. And so let me soften, you know, like let me soften here. It takes a lot of work, a lot of the reparenting work, not just in those situations, right? We're proactive about the situations so that when we are in those situations, we're able to kind of draw upon those tools that we've gathered from that reparenting process outside of them.
Yeah. And another thing, like thinking about the reparenting process is, you know, really creating new patterns and maybe habits and how we, you know, deal with and manage and navigate all of the feelings and emotions that come up within ourselves and that we're kind of feel like are flying at us from a child. And so I'm curious, like from this reparenting perspective, how can we kind of deconstruct how we've been wired or programmed to handle feelings and emotions and really create these new habits in terms of how we respond?
Yeah. So that's a process, because I think the first thing that we have to gain clarity on is like, what do we actually believe? You know, like what are our values truly? I don't think a lot of parents have actually sat down and written out like, these are my values, these are my belief systems, right? I feel like all of us are moving within them just in life, but we haven't really written out or explored it, you know, in a very intentional process to know, what are the things that I believe about my body? What are the things that I believe about money? What are the things that I believe about friendships? What are the things that I believe about romantic relationships, about women, right? About women's place. So it's all of these messages, all of these recordings that we have to understand are, like you said, are programmings. And so once we can identify those, then we can ask the question about whether that's the truth, right? And so if one of my beliefs is like, you know, money is bad, right? Like money is, it's a bad thing to have money. Or one of my beliefs is like, women should be cooks and homemakers, you know, homemakers and childcare providers exclusively, right? And so then we can look at that critically. When we see it, then we're like, is this actually the truth? And if it's not the truth, then what is the truth? You know, and so that's where we kind of call in that inner guidance or that you know, universal wisdom outside of ourselves to ask, okay, then if this is not the truth, because it doesn't feel like the truth in my body, it feels like it's not, then what is the truth? You know, and then we can get really clear about that. And so that's what we begin to move towards and constantly seeking that guidance, you know, constantly seeking that, how do I align myself to that truth about myself, about my values, about who I want to be and how I want to unfold.
Yeah. And when we think about reparenting, what would you say is just the most important thing to remember about this process?
It's slow. It's slow. There's so many times that I've gotten so frustrated with myself because I'm like, I thought I was further. I thought I was further along in the process. I thought this wouldn't bother me anymore. I've already done this. You know, I've already processed this. I already thought that I got to this like cognitive place. But again, because so many of our wounds are tied to ancestral things, are tied to things that we don't remember, they're going to keep surfacing. And so I think that part of it, for me at least, has been to just remind myself to be patient. And that patience is hard to come by. You know, we're trying to be patient with our children. We're trying to be patient with our partners. And now we really, really have to be patient with ourselves. And so because we were not afforded that patience from our parents, a lot of times it can be a learning process in and of itself in just that, you know, embodying that patience with ourselves.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it really is though, like a trickle down effect. Like if we're only practicing this in like with one type of relationship, like with a spouse or a parenting partner or a child, of course that we'll make some progress there, but I really feel like the greater progress is seen when we start with ourselves, because then it just trickles down into all the relationships that are, you know, that are related to the self.
Yeah, one of the most beautiful experiences I had last year was that somebody who had taken the reparenting course with me came back and said, you know, I just got offered like three or four different positions, high paying positions. And she was like, the only reason that I felt even brave enough to be able to apply for those positions was because of the reparenting work, you know? And so she got this like very prestigious position at some company. And she was just so grateful because I was like, that's not even the intention necessarily, right? Like but that makes sense, because when you are really integrating that process and you're really integrating that, you know, excavation of yourself and tilling through, you know, what is the truth, what is not the truth, of course that's going to echo into every, like you said, every other relationship.
Yeah, absolutely. And for the parents and caregivers who are listening that are thinking like, oh my gosh, like this makes a lot of sense. I've never really thought about reparenting or trying to talk to my inner child or heal those wounds or even, you know, take a closer look at them. What would you say is a first step that that people can take today just to get started on that journey?
Yeah, I think people need to find community around it. I know that there's a lot of Facebook groups specifically around inner child work where that language is shared, that language is the foundation. And so it can feel, like you said earlier, very isolating to not be able to have conversations about this stuff with people who you're in relationship with who may not get it, you know, who may not understand. And so I feel like the more we can allow ourselves to feel supported just by resonating or being resonated with in community. So I encourage people to, you know, do a search for reparenting or remothering. You know, I have a group called Latina Mothers Remothering Ourselves. You know, we do the Criándome, Cuidándome, which means caring for myself and raising myself. I have a course, but then we also have like, you know, communications within our cohort. And so I really just encourage people to find community around the language of reparenting. So go on Facebook, search inner child or, you know, inner child groups, maybe a therapist that also has that modality. So yeah, there's a lot of things that we can do, but we definitely need that support around it.
Yeah. Support is just so important. Just, you know, asking for the support we need. And I just want to like underscore, it doesn't make us weak to need support and to ask for support. It actually makes us stronger in really getting our needs met so we can show up the way we want to show up in all the areas of our life.
Yes, absolutely.
So is there anything else you want to add about reparenting in the toddler years or anything that we might've missed?
You know, I just want to, again, encourage parents to be so gentle and patient with themselves. You know, I think that toddlers definitely present to us, you know, a mirror, and this is very cliche, but it's true, right? Like they really are showing us pieces of ourselves that maybe were lost in our own childhoods, and pieces of ourselves that are seeking to be reclaimed. You know, a lot of parents are very uncomfortable with play because we were not played with as children. And so allowing ourselves to kind of do that exploration of like, what's going on? Why am I so uncomfortable with play? Are there places that I can incorporate play into my life as an adult, or remember aspects of how I like to play as a child, right? As a child, I loved to collage. And then for a long time, I held this belief that I was not an artist, that art was not my thing, that, you know, nobody would appreciate the art that I did. And so it was a couple years ago that I was like, you know what? That's not the truth. You know, I love art. I want to collage. And so being able to collage has made me more open to doing art with my kids. You know, it's made me more open to appreciating the art that they're doing and really nurturing that for them. So, so just making those connections is something that I always will encourage, you know, just make the connection from what you love, what you still need to heal, and differentiating that from the parenting and also integrating it. So like you got to separate it, but you also have to make sure that you know how to, you know, understand what sense it makes within the context of parenting.
Yeah. Yes, I agree. And, you know, it's a process, and that's what I always say, you're allowed to learn alongside your toddler. And, these are like my three, like, you know, mantras for transforming toddlerhood. You're always allowed to learn alongside your toddler. Each and every moment's an invitation to practice again, and practice makes progress, not perfection. Like that yes. is, that's the mantras.
Yes. Those are such good mantras. Absolutely. We need to like tattoo them on our forehead, everybody.
Exactly. Oh my goodness. Well, Leslie, I mean, it's just been so amazing talking to you, and I feel like there's so much more we could dive into, and our time's coming to a close, but there might be people who want to continue this conversation with you. So where can they find you and your work?
Yeah. So they can go to LatinxParenting.org, LatinxParenting.org, or they can find us on Instagram at LatinxParenting. I tweet every now and then too. But yeah, I think the biggest platform that we have right now is Instagram and Facebook as well. So yeah, if people want to come and find community around these things, that's where to do it.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for being here today and just sharing all of your wisdom and compassion and guidance with us all. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, Devin. I appreciate you so much.
Oh, thank you. And thank you. Before we go, I'd actually like to invite everyone to join the discussion thread for this session in the Transforming Toddlerhood Facebook group. We'd love to hear your thoughts, questions, and feedback. And also, don't forget to upgrade to the premium package so you can access the bonus materials for the conference and watch this session and all the others again and again and share them with your parenting partners. And until next time, we'll see you again soon. Bye.